Hello, everyone. Welcome to a very special episode of Uncanny Trex Covers Penguin vs. Too Old to Die Young. I'm Bob in Cascadia. That's Matt in the Southland. Today, we are talking about episode 2 of these miniseries. That's Inside Man for Penguin and The Lovers for Too Old to Die Young. Matt, how the hell are you doing this evening?
The words miniseries, oh my God. This is like the longest running stuff ever. I feel like I'm having to watch like 2 full movies every time we cover these things.
I want to complain about runtime too, but I want to complain about the runtime of The Penguin rather than Too Old to Die Young. You may be, Bob, that's ridiculous. Too Old to Die Young was 90 minutes and The Penguin was 60 minutes, to which I would say fair, but I've already seen Too Old to Die Young. I knew to expect that. I was hoping The Penguin would get down to more 50 minutes, 55 minutes.
Yeah, that's not what I was hoping for The Penguin as well, Bob. I will complain about The Penguin's runtime. It is way too long for what they're trying to do. I mean, come on.
On the one hand, we were talking about this off mic. On the one hand, they are moving along and doing stuff, so it's not totally stationary. But on the other hand, it doesn't necessarily feel it's advanced so much for episode 2 of what I believe is an 8-episode miniseries, right?
Right. And pacing-wise, Bob, we know this is going to end before whatever Matt Reeves' next film is going to take place. So, I mean, we have we already have an ending spot tacked on.
Yeah, I'll be very interested to see how satisfying the ending feels, bearing that in mind. I would tend to bet it's not going to be very satisfying, but I could be wrong. It would be amusing to be wrong.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you, Bob, now, as of right now, all the pieces we have so far, we've got The Penguin, we've got the Batman film, but then we also have this Riddler miniseries that dropped that the actor actually wrote himself that was absolutely terrible.
As soon as I saw it, was it called The Riddler Year One or was it just called The Riddler?
I think it was Riddler Year One or something like that.
As soon as I saw that, I was, no, this sucks. I'm not going to read it. I don't think we really talked The Batman last time, but I will just say about The Batman, The Riddler is so bad in that movie. It's so annoying. It's such an unoriginal, uninteresting version of The Riddler. Oh, man, I've got a Heath Ledger as hard as I can Heath Ledger. Paul Dano's been very good in some stuff before. I don't want to just totally diss on him, but man, that Riddler performance.
Awesome. You hit the nail on the head, Bob, when you said that it was just supposed to be Hush, but they knew they needed a more familiar villain to sell tickets.
Yeah. And the other thing that was funny I would bring up from this, it's been a while since The Batman was out. Hasn't been quite a while since I watched it, but it's been a while since it's been out. And when my boy and I, who I watched this with, were watching it, we both just about the Riddler from the Batman because he's so bad. And then when they make a reference to the Riddler later in the show, in the second episode of The Penguin, for a minute, we were both excited. Oh, cool. They're dropping an Easter egg about the Riddler. Oh, no, they already did that. That was the villain in the first one.
Isn't that awful, Bob? And that just goes further to show you that I'm hoping this show does not turn into Gotham. These little Easter eggs are just... like, even that piece is just lame to me. I know you didn't watch much Gotham, but Gotham was all like that nonstop dropping of Easter eggs. And what's funny is we have so many different versions of these characters and shows to look at. Like you just said, oh yeah, wait, we've already been introduced to Riddler in this, I guess, in this universe or continuity or whatever you want to call it.
I only watched, I think, 3 episodes of Gotham, and I actually enjoyed the 3 episodes I saw quite a bit, but they extended the season order a couple of times for the first season. It started out maybe 13. And then extended it till 16, and then they maybe extended it till 2022. I don't have 22 episodes a year of it in me, you know?
Well, what I love about it, Bob, is you can just go back and you can just figure out which episode or which character you wanted to see them butcher. Just go back and watch those episodes. I want to see how they butcher Bane. So I just found the Bane-themed episodes, because these characters don't ever come back. That's how they did Bane. Riddler, Penguin, they're reoccurring. Poison Ivy, I think, is reoccurring, but everybody else just drops in. Psycho of the week.
Interesting. I have thought about going back with my boy and watching Gotham. I'm not sure how far we'd actually get if we did.
But Bob, with Penguin, we have this character that we think is Hugo Strange.
Yeah, I've also heard some speculation of Jonathan Crane, but Hugo Strange seems to be the more likely candidate. I honestly forgot to put down the character's name as given, but he's Sophia's counselor at Arkham. And then do you know the actor that's playing him? I believe he's a bald Puerto Rican gentleman named Theo Rossi. I know him from Sons of Anarchy, but I didn't know if you'd recognized him from anything.
Just because I'm bald, Bob, you think I'm going to recognize him? As bald guys know each other? Is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah.
We just hang out together?
Yeah, I think you have secret signs, Seth. I think you dress in robes and do strange rituals.
No, Bob, I don't know who this is, but I will say that it is interesting though, that they are going in that direction there. Are they going to start dropping character names all over the place? Are we going to start seeing this?
I wouldn't say all over the place, but as my boy and I were talking, I was thinking Hugo Strange seems like the type of character where you could use him and you could not step on Matt Reeves' future plans
for
Batman. Another example of this is jumping ahead, but we have this dirty cop, this bad cop. Actually, he's an ex-cop at this point, but he used to be on the force and dirty, and he's still dirty, named Marcus Wise. And we didn't catch his name at first, and we were wondering, is that Harvey Bullock? Is that Arnold Flass? Is that somebody else? Then we got the name Marcus Wise, and I was like, that doesn't sound familiar. That didn't ring a bell for either of us. But I did do some looking, and apparently he is an actual cop from Chuck Dixon's final little story arc or final little mini run.
Oh, okay.
Drake Robin. I've never read that, but don't know anything about him in the comics. But I can see how, okay, we need a cop character. Let's pull him because he's not on the list, whereas Bullock and Flass might be on the list, or Corrigan might be on the list of maybe in Batman 2 or Batman 3, Matt Reeves might want to go there.
You know what job I want, Bob? I want to be the guy who gets to sort like A-list, B-list, C-list, D-list characters that they're allowed to use. This guy, Marcus Wise, I mean, come on. I don't even remember him on Gotham Central, but he's some random character in the Tim Drake Robin comic. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
So D-list. They could have used him for anything. They could have used him for fodder if they wanted to.
James Gunn tells you, okay, I need a character broadly like this.
Yeah.
Go find me one.
I want that job. I want, supply for that.
Yeah, that would be fair stuff. That'd be really good.
What do you think that would pay in this economy, Bob?
Probably slightly better than what I make as a full producer, I would assume. Oh, man. So I don't have super a lot to say about this episode, but I guess to go into some of this, one of the major plot points of this is that the Penguin has a scheme to run drugs in a FEMA truck. And obviously this gets more timely in the wake of the hurricanes in North Carolina. Horrible. But still, the idea of running drugs in a FEMA truck, pretty funny.
Yeah, I can believe it, Bob. And to be honest, I don't know if any of our listeners are ever in the southern part of the United States, but there's Dollar Generals at every corner. I believe those are actual drug fronts.
Interesting. Interesting. Did I ever tell you about the pizza place I used to go into that I was pretty sure was a drug front?
No.
There's in my old apartment in the city, there were two pizza places nearby, and one of them kept longer hours than the other. And so I would sometimes go in the one that kept longer hours, and usually I'd go in when I was drunk. And it would be funny because there would be many, many people and many, many cars in the parking lot. They wouldn't really seem to be doing anything. They'd just be standing around. And whenever you'd order a pizza, it would create a little mini crisis.
Well,
as they like fall, they all ran around and back.
We had to actually make pizza, not drugs.
Yeah.
We had to shift the operation.
And so it was always fun to do. I didn't do it too often, but it was fun to go in there once a month, every other month, and just see the show. And yeah, like I said, I was usually inebriated. And once I left my debit card in there, and it was really funny because I went back the next day and then it saved for me, like they knew who I was.
Oh.
Like, this is the safest place to lose money or debit card because they don't need the heat.
They don't want anybody coming by.
Immediately want to get it back to you.
I do think it's hilarious to stop the drug dealings to make you pizza.
My roommates at the time would also go in there. We would usually go in separately, but we all enjoyed it. Sadly, it's now a Chinese restaurant, and I've moved from that apartment, and I have not gone back to see if the Chinese restaurant is also a drug run or not. I don't know.
Yeah, I always wonder if they just change the cuisine.
Oh, man, what are the drugs? What are the drugs in this universe? Drops?
Drops, Bob. You put them in your eyes.
Yeah, the drops are always the same. They're always the same. So, Matt, we sort of find out that Sofia Falcone, at least, is apparently a serial killer of women, which I don't think we knew before. Although, the way they're talking about it, it makes me think there's probably a much more elaborate backstory involving the Penguin and other members of the Falcone family. And so, probably, there might be more here than as they're presenting. Did you feel that way, too?
Yeah, I feel like they're adding, like, a little too much to the mythos as well, Bob. I feel like some of these characters would be a little more mysterious. Now that I know Sofia Falcone was a serial killer as well, she's locked up in there with Martha Wayne. She's locked up there with Riddler, Joker. I guess it fits. She eats spaghetti weird. I feel like I know a whole lot more about Sofia Falcone than I ever really wanted to know.
I assume this, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's just going to be a few scenes, but I assume this show is veering straight toward a massive flashback, maybe a whole episode even. Are you looking forward to that or no? Or maybe you're just indifferent to it. I'm not looking. I mean, it could be good and I could be wrong, but I'm not super looking forward to this flashback I'm anticipating.
Yeah, we'll see it. We'll see an episode that focuses on whatever happened to her, and somebody will tell the story of what happened. And we'll be like, oh, that's so shocking. And then guess who's going to die, Bob? Sofia Falcone is going to kill Penguin's girlfriend.
Oh, man. Brutal.
You're welcome. Brutal.
Yeah.
Spoilers.
Yeah, you called it. You called it. Did you catch, I don't think this was said in the first episode, although I could be wrong, but did you catch what Penguin's girlfriend's Eve's surname is?
I think it was Carlo.
Which implies maybe we're dealing with a daughter or a granddaughter or niece of
Clayface. Yeah, that's right, Bob. We got Clayface going on here. Maybe Sophia will go and stab her and she'll turn to clay.
One reference I did enjoy was they mentioned the Sprang River in this, which maybe that's an established thing that's mentioned in other Batman comics. If so, I've either missed it or never noticed it, but just a nice little tribute to the 1950s Batman artist Dick Sprang, but who also has the funniest name ever, Dick Sprang.
Dick Sprang. That's a crazy name.
No, Matt, actually there is a real Sprang River in New Jersey. I looked it up.
Spring or Sprang?
Sprang.
Sprang. Okay, I guess it's Sprang River.
No, there's not a Sprang River in New Jersey. I'm lying. I'm lying to you. So, Matt, have you read Shakespeare's Othello?
A long time ago, yes.
Do you remember Iago from that play? You getting the Iago vibes off Penguin, especially in this episode?
Oh, totally. He's trying to play everybody and just be all in for himself, yeah.
He gets
it's all about luck with him, too, Bob. It's nothing he does is going to work out. Everything he plans goes to ship, and then luck lets him survive and keep going.
Well, he is lucky, but... maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like there's a way in which it's less that he's lucky and it's more just that he knows how to improvise. And so when the moment arises, he goes with it.
He adapts the situation very well. Which is like how he knew to put the knife, for example, the knife. Okay, come on. That was real quick and smart. He knew his plan wasn't going to work out. He knew that the kid he's hired didn't drop the jewels like he was supposed to. So he had to improvise quickly.
It was a really clever plan, both on the Penguin's part and on the writer's part. Of the Penguin frames Sophia's current goon, who's also Alberto's ex-goon, which makes him plausible. And not only is he plausible for Alberto, but it further isolates Sophia and pushes her closer to him. I thought that was just like really, really thoughtful plotting. I do have to give it up to the writers for that.
So Bob, is Penguin going to be sticking the knife in Sophia?
It seems like he probably will, and it seems like he probably already did in some fashion in the past, right?
Right.
I also just want to say, as a teacher, Matt, I really admire Penguin lecturing Vic over an open grave. That's good pedagogy. That's a good classroom scene, a classroom encounter.
We do that all the time. We have like an area at our school for that.
It's good for the students. It gets them the physical work of digging the grave. It gets them outdoors and some fresh air. It makes them confront their own mortality. All this is good in education.
That should be a consequence. Dig your own grave.
We're only going to put you in it if you're...
This is the fifth time today, son. What that means, fifth time... go dig your grave.
Oh, I'll be checking. It's got to be at least 5 feet. I'd prefer 7, but it's got to be at least 5.
One more time, you're going to go lay in it.
Okay. Time after that, I get him to start filling. So I will say, Matt, I'm still enjoying this show, but it did seem like there was a little bit maybe of a quality drop off from the first episode. And there was a sense that it just didn't seem worth it. Usually we pick a character of the week and we pick a shot of the episode and a character of the episode. And I just didn't. Maybe you were more thoughtful or attentive or more enthusiastic than I, but I didn't have the energy for it.
That's the problem, Bob, the word attentive. I paid attention to this episode. I thought really well, but nothing really stands out. And that's the problem. It's the first episode, stuff really stood out. I feel they shot most of their shot that first episode. You can tell they put a lot of effort into some of the scenes and some of the way the camera work and all that.
Most of the shows we cover are ensemble shows, partially just because of the genre, maybe partially because of our taste. But obviously, look at the name. This is not an ensemble show.
So right.
It might not be good to... maybe character of the episode just isn't going to be a very meaningful category for this series, right? Because it's always going to be about the Penguin. But... I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. Is there a good shot to pick next week or no?
Yeah, I don't remember much from this one. Other than the kid Barrett digging his own grave was cool.
I don't know if the staging or the shooting of it was particularly novel. Maybe it was, and I wasn't paying close enough attention. But it was almost like more good idea or good convention than a good shot.
Well, don't worry, Bob, because if you like crazy shots, have no fear. We've got you here with this second episode of...
What a transition. So we're going over to The Lovers from Too Old to Die Young. Matt, do you have anything broad you wanted to say about this episode?
Oh, God, Bob. Okay. What's the word you use to describe people who are plain? You describe me like that all the time. Like, my tastes are very...
Pedestrian.
Pedestrian. Okay, pedestrian is the word you want to use? Okay.
Yes,
well,
yes.
This is going to be one of the most pedestrian things I've ever seen on this podcast, Bob, but...
Oh, my body is ready. My body's ready.
The second episode, I knew it was going to be one of these long, drawn-out things. I saw the runtime, so I'm like, okay. So I prepared myself for that. So I turn it on. I'm okay. Got this weird-ass techno music going. Okay, we got more of this. Yeah. Got the colors going. Then, Bob, they start talking, and it's in Spanish. And that means I have to read subtitles too.
Matt, that wasn't the deal. Well, notch things. The deal wasn't that I have to read.
So now, not only am I having to focus all my attention on the show, I can't, you know, look away with my attention span. I have to focus, read what's being said, and I have to focus on when they're actually going to talk because these shots are so damn long. I never know when someone's actually going to say something. So for the, you know, the hour and a half the show went on, I had to keep my eyes glued to the television set. So he gets that credit. Now, as far as it being interesting, it was okay. Not the best. Not the best. Now, like I said, Bob, usually I'm okay with subtitles, but this I was, come on. I know he's going to have these long, drawn-out shots when nothing is said. And he's going to pop in with something. And on top of this, Bob, some of it was in Spanish, and they didn't translate it.
Yeah, you didn't need to know. Whenever we have conversations like this, it makes me want to switch to teaching film instead of English and just wants to make me make all of my pedestrian students just watch nothing. Subtitled films.
I don't mind it usually, Bob, but with this, I just knew this was going to be the slower moving thing. The subtitles were just going to drag it out even further.
Well, speaking of the text on the screen, Matt, I've long hated the title of the show, Too Old to Die Young.
Yeah.
I've made fun of it a lot. I think it's lame. But I do have to admit that it does really look cool, the different ways they project it onto the screen and the different fonts. And in this episode, towards the beginning, they're panning over, I believe it's a Yuritsa, and she's underdressed and in bed, and then they're projecting up in purple letters, too old to die young, and they're changing the tilt, and it does look really cool. The only apology for the title of the show is the funny things they can do with it on screen, right?
Yeah, it was really cool the first 10 minutes they showed it. You don't know if I'm joking or not, dude.
I think you're joking, but I just don't think it's that sick of a burn.
So
in a way, we're agreeing, but we're agreeing in a way that's not.
Because Bob would like to watch 10 minutes of this titling letters. All right, Bob.
Oh, okay. I thought you were. Never mind. Okay.
Yeah, Bob didn't get it. Bob doesn't get my humor.
Sorry, man. It went right above my head like a Spanish.
Exactly.
So were you surprised that the focus of this episode shifted from the first episode was mostly about Martin, the dirty cop. Now we're about Jesus, the guy who shot Martin's partner, Larry, for either Larry or Martin shooting Jesus' mother, Magdalena.
There was definitely the shift, but he seems just as screwed up as Martin, so it was okay. We get one creepy guy for another creepy guy.
They're both good reffin' protagonists, so they'll move from Copenhagen Cowboy, or they're Ryan Gosling and The Driver and Only God Forgives.
There's no, like, lovable characters in any of these shows. Nobody's like, hey, I want to hang out with that guy. No, they're all...
Yeah. Oh, and I misspoke. I should say Ryan Gosling in Drive. Yeah. Driver is a good late 70s movie that Drive ripped off a little bit. Speaking of similarities, we spend a lot, not as much, but a lot of episode one of Martin being uncomfortable in Billy Baldwin's house.
Right.
And also in some other social settings, right? In this episode, it's basically Jesus being uncomfortable in his uncle Don Ricardo's house for most of the episode.
Yeah, it's pretty awkward. But, okay, make sure I got the understanding of the plot.
Martin is the crooked cop.
Yeah, he killed Magdalena. Yeah, Magdalena's son is Jesus.
Yeah, Magdalena's son is Jesus. And then Don Ricardo's son is Miguel, but Don Ricardo does not like Miguel.
Gotcha. Okay. But we do.
And the fact that Don Ricardo doesn't like Miguel makes Miguel jealous of his cousin, Jesus.
Gotcha. And then Miguel also doesn't like the cops, right? Or does like the cops. One of them doesn't like the cops.
Well, so the Mexican cops have a relationship.
Yeah, they can say they have the soccer thing going on.
They're on Don Ricardo's payroll.
Right, because they got the crooked ones, yeah.
I maybe should have paid more attention to this, but it seems when Miguel comes to power, he's going to, how would you say, he's going to either ask more from them or screw them over.
Miguel, his relationship with the cops is not
his new power. He's drunk on his new power, and the cops resent that, is how I took it. Zeus and Miguel make up at the end, and they kill some cop.
Yuritsa is Don Ricardo's...
nominally his nurse in his illness, right? Yeah. But it seems like they're probably lovers. But she's also kind of
She's a medium, yes. And she's screwing with Jesus, okay.
And, spoiler, she's Batman.
Okay, she's also the high priestess of death.
I was going to ask you, on those mornings when I sleep in and make you wait to record, is that the equivalent of Don Ricardo dozing off at the table and Miguel making all the henchmen wait until he wakes up, till they can resume eating and drinking?
They had some weird customs going on there, Bob. I'm pretty good. I usually just play video games till you wake up, find something else to do.
Oh, man. And were you surprised that it was when it was revealed that Ricardo's nurse, Yuritsa, is the vigilante, the high priestess of death?
I was relatively surprised. Yes, Bob. She's pretty kick-ass, I guess. She does save that one woman.
Yeah, she's supposed to basically be sold and trafficked.
Yeah, it was awful.
Do you like that basically both Nicholas Winding Refn shows we've watched are sort of superhero shows?
Yeah, they kind of are, in a way.
Yeah, very weird and very non-conventional, but basically sort of super.
About as long as your average superhero film. Each episode.
I would posit infinitely more entertaining than your average superhero film, but maybe that's just me. Maybe I'm built different. Maybe I'm strange. Yeah.
If you really like those scanning shots, Bob, which I'll tell you what, my shot of the episode or any of the shots where they scan across the club or the bar, and you just see people like sitting there staring.
Sitting there staring, maybe getting their drink on, yeah. Maybe getting their beep on.
If you've ever been to a club or anything like that or a bar, it's so loud, you can't really talk to people around you. That's what they do. This is what it would look like. If the music wasn't that weird music that they play, if it was actually the music they play in the clubs in those scenes, it would not look as strange.
That's why I always take Bob to the club. I got to get him to shut up somehow.
Yeah, we were hanging the club.
Those were some lovely tracking shots, and just everybody seems a little zanned out, a little checked out. It's great. I think my favorite is they do a tracking shot on the desert landscape, and then you see Yuritsa stepping out of the desert to stand right before that altar they've made to the High Priestess of Death. And this is before I think we know she's the High Priestess of Death, although it really does start to strongly associate her with the role. Who is your character of the episode, Matt?
That's why she is my character of the episode, Bob. Yuritsa.
Yuritsa's great. I love her. I'm going to have to go with Miguel, though. I mean, he is a monster. He traffics women. He's also a bit of a loser. I think Todd Ricardo is right about him. But that line he has towards the beginning of the episode when, as you mentioned, the cartel and the cops are playing a soccer game and he yells at his crew, "Today we are not just a cartel. We are a fucking soccer team." I have laughed about that with my boy Noah for years. We still have that as an in-joke. We saw this in 2019.
And the rest of the joke, too, Bob, is that they'll kill your family if they don't win. Jeez.
Obviously, Miguel is a Mexican national, but I think he's got the proper American spirit of competition. That's all I'll say.
Yeah. Well, all right, Bob. Well, I look forward to the next 2.5 hours of...
Matt might be lying. He might, in fact, not look forward to the next 2.5 hours of TV. But I'm looking forward to Matt either looking forward or not looking forward to it. Either way will amuse me. This has been Uncanny Treks. I'm Bob in Cascadia. That's Matt in the Southland. Have a great night, everybody.
Thanks for listening.